A little fella came home from school with his report card, and his mother was very disappointed with his grades. She looked at him and said, "You know, this is very disappointing. You could have done so much better." He said, "Well, there is a good side to this. At least you know I'm not cheating." Another little kid, he also came home with a really poor report card, and he had a little bit more sense, and he went rummaging through his dad's old files and found one of his dad's old report cards. And so when he gave him his report card, he gave him his dad's old one at the same time. He said, "Here you go, Dad. It's my report card, but I just want you to know that I found one of your old report cards too. And there's not much difference, really." His dad looked at him and said, "You know what, you're right. My old report card isn't much better than yours. So I think the only fair thing to do is to give you what my dad gave me." In Romans chapter 1 and verse 8, Paul talks about report of the church in Rome. And in verse 8 he says, "First I thank my God through Jesus Christ for all of you, because your faith is being reported all over the world. God, whom I serve my whole heart in preaching the gospel of his Son, is my witness how constantly I remember you in my prayers at all times. And I pray that now, at last, by God's will, the way may be opened for me to come to you." You know, we started our series on Romans last week, and my goal was to do half of chapter 1, verses 1 to 17. I only got as far as verse 7. And so today I'm going to try and whiz through the rest of chapter 1. Otherwise, we'll be on Romans for the entire year, and we're only going to do it for the first 3 months. But Paul is talking here about the church in Rome, and he's saying how, you know, the report of their faith is all over the world. You know, if someone were to give a report about how are we doing as a church, what would they say? Or if they were to give a report about how are we doing spiritually, what would our report card look like? How is our faith, and is it being reported positively? Not just around the world. Very, very few people whose faith has been reported around the world. But what about just even in your own neighbourhood, or workplace, or school, or even in your own family? How are we doing? You know, in verse 11, Paul says, "I long to see you, that I may impart to you some spiritual gift." I'm trying to move the PowerPoint on, but it's not going. He says, "I long to see you that I may impart to you some spiritual gift to make you strong. That is, that you and I may be mutually encouraged by each other's faith. I do not want you to be unaware, brothers, that I plan many times to come to you, but have been prevented from doing so until now, in order that I might have a harvest among you, just as I have had among the Gentiles. I'm obligated, both to Greeks and non-Greeks, both to the wise and the foolish. That is why I'm so eager to preach the gospel also to you who are at Rome. I'm not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God for the salvation of everyone who believes, first for the Jew, then for the Gentiles. For in the gospel, a righteousness from God is revealed, a righteousness that is by faith from first to last, just as it is written, the righteous will live by faith." You know, Paul says, I long to come to you so I can impart a spiritual gift that mutually we can be encouraged by each other's faith. When we come to church, there is something about just being mutually encouraged. You know, Hebrews 10 and Hebrews 3 talks about just this holiday of meeting together, that we can encourage one another. And part of the reason why we come together is so that we can encourage each other and spur one another on. When you come to church, what's your attitude that you come with? Do you come to encourage others? Do you come just to get encouragement for yourself? You know, Paul talks about this mutual encouragement. He wants to impart a spiritual gift that's more than just a present. The apostles had the ability to lay hands on people and pass on spiritual gifts, and he wanted to do that. He'd never visited the church, and that's the reason why in the book of Romans you don't read much about spiritual. In fact, you read nothing about spiritual gifts, of miraculous gifts, because he hasn't visited the church yet, and apparently none of the other apostles had. And so he wanted to do that, to impart that spiritual gift for them. But he says, you know, I've been prevented from doing so. However, the reason why he planned many times to come to them in verse 13 was that he might have a harvest among them. You know, one of Paul's driving ambitions was to preach the gospel, was to help people become Christians. Now, 1 Corinthians 9 talks about how that his desire was to win as many as possible, to do everything in his power to help people come to know Jesus. In verse 14, he says, I'm obligated to both Greeks and non-Greeks, wise or foolish. He says, I'm eager to preach the gospel. You know, there's an obligation. Why was there an obligation? Well, Paul understood just where he had come from. He understood just how much grace had been shown to him. In 1 Corinthians 15, verse 9, he talks about just the impact of that grace, that it made him want to work harder than anyone, because he knew just how much he had been blessed. You know, when Saul was converted, he changed his name from Saul to Paul. You know, Paul in Greek, it means small or least. And Paul often referred to himself as the least of the apostles, the least of all God's people, the worst of sinners. Why? Because he recognized that he was undeserving of God's mercy and grace. And he had been blessed and given something phenomenal that he didn't deserve. And so he couldn't help but want to share it with other people. You know what it's like? Imagine this. Imagine if you discovered the cure for cancer. How would you feel? You're a research scientist, you're studying, you're working away, and one day you find the cure. What would go through your mind? You'd be elated, you'd be joyful, but would you keep that discovery to yourself? Would you hush it up and say, well, this is great, I've discovered this cure, and so now if anyone in my family ever contracts this illness, I can save them. Is that what you'd do? Or wouldn't you just want to tell the whole world and let everyone know that there has been a cure that can change the lives of so many suffering people and families all over the world? You know, that's what Paul had discovered, and he had a cure for a spiritual cancer called sin. And so he felt obligated, and it wasn't just an obligation, but there was a desire. You know, last week we talked about the difference between doing things out of duty or doing things out of desire. And when we have a correct understanding of God's grace and God's mercy, then we're going to want to share things as opposed to feel like, oh, I have to share things. Now he goes on to say in verse 16, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. It's the power of God for salvation. Are we ashamed of God's word? Are we ashamed of the gospel? No, literally, the gospel in Greek, evangelion, it simply means good news. It's good news. And what we have before us is something good, but sometimes we don't realize just how good this really is. You know, if a lifeguard were to jump into a swimming pool and grab a swimmer out of the pool and just suddenly out of the blue and just pull them to the side, that swimmer wouldn't exactly be particularly happy about someone interrupting their swimming. But if the person that the lifeguard dragged out of the water was actually drowning, then that person would be eternally grateful. They would be just so appreciative. The fact is, we don't realize we're drowning. And until we do, until we realize just what a desperate situation that we are really in, we don't really appreciate the gospel. We don't appreciate the good news. You know, in verse 17, he says, for in the gospel, a righteousness from God is revealed, a righteousness that is by faith from first to last. Just as it is written, the righteous will live by faith. You know, what the gospel shows us, the good news, is that there is a righteousness that comes from God that is something we don't have to earn. It's by faith from first to last. That God can give us, can declare us righteous, not because we deserve it, but it's because of what Jesus has done for us. You know, without that righteousness, we are in dire straits. That we are under the wrath of God. Let me show you what I mean. Verse 18, and we're going to kind of whiz through this. In verse 18 he says, the wrath of God has been revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness. Since what may be known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God, nor gave thanks to him. But their thinking became futile, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools, and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal man, and birds, and animals, and reptiles. You know, in verse 18 he says, the wrath of God is being revealed against all the godlessness and wickedness of men. You know, if we look around the world today, and we can see there is a lot of terrible things going on in the world. You know, much of that is terrible events of our own making. And in some ways, God, when we sin, when we choose to ignore God's plan for our lives, when we choose to do things our own way, God allows us that freedom of choice. And that's both a blessing and a curse. Because if we freely choose to follow God, then we're going to be blessed. But if we choose to do our own thing, then it's going to lead to dire consequences. And, you know, sometimes people say, well, why is there so much suffering in the world? If God's loving, why doesn't he step in and do something? Well, what God has done is he's given us freedom of choice. And because of our freedom of choice, we end up causing most of our own suffering. God doesn't put us each in a protective bubble so that we're protected from other people's freedom of choice. That our poor choices can negatively influence and affect others around us. But God, in his mercy, he's given us a message of good news that we can have something positive to look forward to if we choose his path and if we choose his way. And what he says is that we are without excuse because all of creation speaks about the invisible qualities of God. That people cannot say on the last day, oh, I didn't know. Because all you have to do is look around and you can see for yourself the evidence for God. You ever been to the top of a mountain? You ever looked around, just the view? Or from an airplane, have you ever looked out of the window of an airplane and you look on the world and you just see the earth from a distance? Or you ever seen these pictures that they have from space, of the planet, from space amongst the stars? And you know, the more you look around at nature, the more you stop and think, there is a God. I remember the very first time I think it was 1996, I was in Manila, in the Philippines, and I was out at night, and it was just out in the middle of nowhere, and I was able to look up at the stars, and it was just breathtaking. You know, when you're outside of the, when you're in the city and you look up at the stars at night, you don't realize how much you don't see. But the minute you go out into the country where there's no light pollution and you look up, it's just phenomenal. And I remember just being totally in awe and just moved by what I could see. And yet there are moments like that when you just get out into nature. And maybe you're just in a beautiful country. Maybe you're in Scotland or Wales, or and you're looking out and you just see, wow, this is incredible, and it just touches something deep inside. That's what creation does. It doesn't even have to be creation. Just nature itself. You know, you hold a newborn child, for example, and you think, wow, this is incredible. You know, just taking a walk down by the river, or just being out in the countryside, just being amongst God's creation, it tells us there's more to life than just what we see around us. And we're going to be without excuse come judgment day. But what the Bible tells us is this: for those who choose their own path, in verse 21, he says, for although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God, nor gave thanks to him, but their thinking became futile, their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal man and birds and animals and reptiles. You know, Paul talks about in verse 18 about how people suppress the truth by their wickedness. And then he goes on to say how in verse 23 they exchange the glory of the immortal God for something inferior. We do this all the time. We make poor exchanges. That instead of worshiping God for who he is and acknowledging him for what he has done, we choose instead to come up with something of our own creation. And here he's talking about people who worship idols, who've come up with something man-made. Why? Because they don't want to acknowledge God for who he is. They'd rather have a God of their own invention who bows to their will than they bow into the will of the Creator. And so in verse 24, God gave them over in their sinful desires of their hearts to sexual impurity for the degrading of their bodies with one another. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshipped and served created things rather than the Creator who is forever praised. Amen. You know, stop it for a moment and think, what are you worshipping in your life? You say, well, I don't bow down to anything or anyone. But what takes priority in your life? Because whatever takes priority in your life, that's your God. And for some people, it's their careers, and they focus on making money. And that money then becomes their God. For other people, it's fame or popularity or position. And so that's what they pursue, and that is what is the driving motivation in their life. And it becomes all-consuming. And that becomes their God. Now, unless God is number one, then we've made a foolish exchange. And instead of worshipping God, we're worshipping a lie. You know, in verse 26, he says, because of this, God gave them over to shameful lusts. Even their women exchanged natural relations for unnatural ones. In the same way, the men also abandoned natural relations with women and were inflamed with lust for one another. Men committed indecent acts with other men and receiving themselves the due penalty for their perversion. Furthermore, since they did not think it worthwhile to retain the knowledge of God, he gave them over to his depraved mind to do what ought not to be done. They have become filled with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed, and depravity. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice. They are gossips, slanderers, God-haters, insolent, arrogant, and boastful. They invent ways of doing evil. They disobey their parents. They are senseless, faithless, heartless, ruthless. Although they know God's righteous decree that those who do such things deserve death, they not only continue to do those very things, but also approve of those who practice them. Wow, that's quite depressing. Because, you know, you look at this list of sin, you see what's going on, and you see, you know, three times he talks about how people exchange things. They exchange glory of God for images. They exchange natural relations for unnatural ones. Yeah, they exchange the truth of God for a lie. And frequently he talks about how then God just gives them over. God gives them over. God allows them to go their own way. And when he says the wrath of God is being revealed, so much of the wrath of God, the beginning of it, is being revealed right here on earth as we receive the due penalty for our sins. We don't have to wait till judgment day. Even now we look around and we see the consequences of our sin. God allows us to go down the path of lies and falsehood, and it leads us to a miserable conclusion. No, it's kind of sad. When you see the consequences of sin, and you see just the way the world has changed. You know, in the 1950s, there was an actress called Ingrid Bergman. If you know Ingrid Bergman, then you're in my age group. You categorize yourself as being old. But she won, I think she received something like 5 different Oscar nominations for different movies and everything else. But in 1950, I think it was, she got pregnant. Up until that time, she was the darling of Hollywood. But she got pregnant outside of wedlock. And there was incredible outrage. And Hollywood basically shunned her. And so for the next 6 years, she didn't make any movies in Hollywood. She went to Italy, made a movie there. I think she came to the UK, made a movie over there. But Hollywood wouldn't touch her with a barge pole. Why? Because she gave birth outside of wedlock. And that just wasn't done. You skipped forward some 4 decades. You know, in the 90s, there's a fella by the name of John Tesh who used to be the presenter on this big show called Entertainment Tonight in America. And he got married in 92. He just before his when he got engaged to his girlfriend, he, you know, he said, you know, my girlfriend and I, we're not engaging in any kind of sexual activity until our marriage. And the media went crazy. They're like, what? No sex before marriage? And he was interviewed on various talk shows as to why would he take such a radical approach. And it was the complete reversal from just 40 years previous. That now in this day and age, when someone says, oh, I'm gonna be celibate before I'm married, that's met with shock, horror. And that just tells you where we are at with society. Just how far we've drifted from God's standards and from God's laws. You know, when God tells us to avoid sexual sin, and when God tells us that the only place for sex is within marriage, he's not telling us that to rob us of our pleasure. He's not doing that to somehow steal our joy, but he's doing that because he loves us and he wants us to understand what's best for us, and he's trying to protect us. And any time we go outside of God's plan, we are stepping into a minefield. And you know, you look around the world today, and you know, it's Hollywood portrays sex as if it's sex outside of marriage, as if it's normal, as if it's the right way to live. But it's so messed up. They don't tell you all the consequences of doing it man's way rather than God's way. You know, Jack and I, we went to see a movie this last week. We saw an advanced screening of this movie called Ex Machina, and about a robot with that develops artificial intelligence. And you know, it's rated 15, and because it was an advanced preview, we weren't able to read up on all the details, but we figured that would be a decent enough movie. And the film itself was good, but for a 15-rated movie, towards the end, there was just so much nudity. I was embarrassed. I just sat there, didn't know where to look. I didn't want to look at the screen, but I didn't want to look up there because Jack's sitting over there. So I'm looking like, oh. Because I'm the one who said, let's go and see this movie. How awesome. How embarrassing. But you look at all the movies that are produced and you see how, you know, the people engage in sexual activity outside of marriage and how pleasant and joyful it is and isn't it fun and there's no consequences. But what they don't show you is they don't show you all the sexually transmitted infections that occur. They don't show you all the unwanted pregnancies. They don't show you all the psychological damage and all the abortions that happen as a result. They don't show you just the suffering that is produced by people doing things their way rather than God's way. You know, in 2003, there was something like over 600,000 children under the age of 15 contracted HIV. Under the age of 15. Between the ages of 1 and 4, AIDS is now the 9th leading cause of death. Children between the ages of 1 and 4. Most of them obviously contracted from their mother. You know, it's estimated that around the clock, every 30 seconds, a teenage girl will get pregnant. Every 30 seconds. That there are literally, now it's numbered in the millions, of children who are born every year into single parent families, and millions aborted every single year. You know, psychiatrists will tell you that unmarried women who are sexually active are 8 times more likely to require psychiatric care. But you don't know that, you don't hear these kinds of stats. Why? Because that's not encouraging to show in a movie. That put a dampener on your latest rom-com. And so it's not included. And so children are given this, are left with this painted picture, this false picture of what it's like to engage in sexual activity. And people think it's okay and it's normal and it's enjoyable. And you don't hear about all the downsides. In America alone, there are 40,000 new STI infections contracted, sexually transmitted infections contracted every single day. 40,000. And two-thirds of those are in people aged under 25. It's horrible. Cervical cancer. If you're a woman and you're married to a guy or you're sleeping with a guy who has had multiple sexual partners, you are between 5 to 11 times more likely to contract cervical cancer. And you know, if you go, you can just go through the stats. I spent some time working in an STI clinic back when I was in medical school. And it's one of the most depressing places to be. And this was back in the day before everything was computerized, and so everything was kept on files. And all the files, there was no names on the files as there were in the other clinics. It was just numbers to help preserve anonymity. And it's so sad when people came in, and particularly they came in for results, and you have to give them the results, and just to see the discouragement and the depression. And there are times when you had to a request of a patient who came in that she needed to bring in her partner, because if she was going to be treated for a sexually transmitted infection, her partner would also have to be treated, otherwise it'll just reoccur. And the times when someone contracted it from someone other than their spouse, oh, just complete and total breakdown. But you don't see that, and you don't hear about it very often. But that's the reality of doing things our way rather than God's way. And you know, we don't even have time to go into just all the sexual violence that occurs in the world because of just loose morality, the rapes and the assaults and all the rest of it. And there have been numerous studies done which tie the two together. The only thing I want to say from all of this is simply that all of us, without God, we're in trouble. And the Bible tells us clearly that we're without excuse. I just figured out why this wasn't working. I was pressing the wrong button. But the reality is, the best of us, we're a mess. You know, you just need to go through this, and it may not be whatever sexual sin or anything. It may be something else. I know for me, when I was 15 years old, I had my first sexual encounter, and I was on a school trip. I was going to visit Russia. This is back in 1981, and I was going to visit Russia. We were on this train, and it was myself and lots of other. There were a few other kids from my school, but then there were other kids from other schools. And I remember that we just had ordinary carriages where we were, but some of the schools had sleeper carriages, and so I ended up, you know, talking my way into one of the sleeper carriages with some kids from another school, and ended up being in bed with this girl from another school, and you know, to this day, I'm talking, we're talking something like 40, almost 45 years later, 35 years later. To this day, I wish I could erase from my mind what happened. I wish I could just block it out. I wish that it had never occurred. You know, it's not all roses and fireworks and everything that Hollywood portrays. It's not. But one thing we need to understand is the gospel provides us with hope. That is the power of Christ. It's the power for salvation. And if we do things God's way, then we can be transformed. We can have a righteousness that comes from God. And Paul's writing this because he says, listen, and initially here in chapter 1, he's talking about people who came from a non-Jewish background. That they're in sin and they're messed up. The pagan world, they're in sin, they're messed up, and they have no excuse. The next chapter, he'll get on to the religious people, to the Jews. But ultimately, we're all a mess, and we all need God. And until we realize where we stand, the good news isn't really good news. You know, there's an author who I was reading last night. He received a text message, just a random text message, and it got him thinking from a stranger. And he decided, you know what? The text message he received was quite funny, but he decided, I'm going to send a text message to other random strangers. And so what he decided to do, he wrote a text message and sent it to over 200 random strangers, and he got back some interesting responses. I want to show you. I don't know if you can read it, but the text message he wrote was... I'm going to stand over here so I can read it for you. I can't help but think that you are an incredible and amazing person. I think you're wonderful. I'm just saying. And he sent that at random to 217 random people, just at random. And 85% of the responses that came back was, who is this and how do you get my number? But look at some of the other responses. Wrong number, but whoever you are, thank you. I'll pretend it was meant for me. Wait, who told you? I was just thinking the same thing about myself. Sorry, who is this? It's not one of those things that if I reply I get charged $20, is it? You're the wrong number, but I wish you didn't, because nobody ever tells me that anymore. And he replied to that. He said, what? That's so sad. Why is that? And they replied, because I got old and had kids and turned into a pile of sludge, I guess. You're wonderful, you're amazing. I want to tell you how incredible you are. Just saying. Hey, you the guy who's been looking in my windows. I can't help but think you're an incredibly amazing, wonderful person. Just saying. Have you been reading my journal again? Because I wrote that back myself all the time. That's the rumor I've heard too. Who is this? I don't have your number for some reason. Is this one of my darling sweet grandchildren? I found out this morning I have no treatment options left. Still think so? Yes. Sorry, don't want to talk right now. My mum doesn't think so. Why, thank you, darling. So are you. Will you please tell my kids that? Who is this? Is this Amanda? Please tell me this is Amanda. There's no one else in the world I want to hear it from more. Is this God? Yes. Hi there, big guy. Who is this? Who told you to send this? Was it Amy? No one else knows how crappy life is at the moment. No, not Amy, just someone who thought it and wanted you to hear it. Well, now I'm just going to cry. Who is this? Ah, thank you, whoever you are. I needed to hear that today of all days. Well, that's 100% fine. Please keep texting me forever. You know, the gospel is good news that God wants us all to hear. But we can't really appreciate it until we understand just what a mess we're all in. And Paul's message is, he wants us to recognize, when we exchange the truth for a lie, we're in trouble. We're under the wrath of God. But if we acknowledge where we stand, and we welcome the righteousness that comes through faith, then it's all good. We don't get what we deserve. Instead, we get what God's grace and mercy gives us. And that's something positive. You know, today we're going to have an opportunity to witness someone who is making a decision to put Jesus on in baptism. And it's really encouraging and exciting when young people especially make decisions to become Christians and to put God first. At this time, I'm going to ask Dara Olashagan to come to the front. And Mike and Lola and Tom Collier, and Jack and Andy. Andy's been studying the Bible with Dara, and Tom's been in there as well, and Jack's came in towards the end, and it's just so encouraging just to see just the changes that have been made. And what I'd like to do is just ask them to share very briefly. Maybe Andy, if you can share first, then Tom, and then I'll ask Mike and Lola to come up and share, and then we'll go from there. Thanks.